You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Thursday.
That's right.
Yeah, I've got too much show today. Yeah, I've got so much stuff, I don't even know what to do with it. So, I have no time to screw around today. So, what you're going to hear, like, right now, let me cut the music, because we're going to get serious here. General Dunford spoke at a Senate subcommittee hearing, right? On the Appropriations Committee of the Senate, right? So, dealing with money. And, the hearing was for the DOD. So, Senate doing their budget due diligence. And, yesterday, Secretary Shanahan and General Dunford testified. Now, you've seen some headlines, but if you go looking for stuff, you don't find anything. So not being easily deterred, I know where to look. That's right. So what you have to do is you got to find the committee that it was in. Because you looked at, so what I was looking for was video. I wanted to hear what Dunford had to say about our presence in Afghanistan, because you see a few headlines. But Reuters has maybe, now this is Reuters, huge, okay? It's a two paragraphs and then a sentence. So it's one sentence in the first paragraph. There's one sentence in the second paragraph and one sentence in the third paragraph. I don't know how many words. So, headline, U.S. will need forces in Afghanistan until no insurgency is left. Dunford. That's not exactly what he said. So, you're going to hear him. But the hearing's about 2 hours. And they talk about everything from mental health to North Korea to nukes to Iran to Syria. blah, 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 blah. So I'm going to take you through that thing. And then we'll talk about other news later. The other thing that's happened to me is since I talked about the little series that we're going to do on called On Discipline, and kind of a takeoff of it's kind of a takeoff from a book called On Infantry that was written by a guy named English. I want to say his first name is Alex English. John English. Let me find out. On Infantry, John A. English. Anyway, so it's kind of a takeoff on that. Anyway, so I'm going to do a series of interviews, and I'm going to interview guys who've done this for years, people that have done this for years, men, women, whoever. Matters not to me. And just get their thoughts on this whole very interesting discussion about discipline, right, that we're having with the generation of Marines that doesn't take criticism well. So anyway, I think that's a pretty interesting little discussion. So anyway, what's happened though is that's percolating around the internet. So I had somebody yesterday, actually it was last night after I went to bed, so probably early this morning for him, he sent me these things. He said, I've had these for 30 years. And I want you to have them. Check it out. So what he sent me were and I printed them off. Hold on one second. I know that was moderately unprofessional, but I never said I was a professional. This is from when General Van Riper was the commanding general of 2nd Marine Division. Okay? And these are different letters that he put out, and they're copies. Mimeograph copies, I think, right? And so he sent me these, and they're awesome, right? Now, the thing that, mind you now, these are men, Marines, right? These are Marines who fought the last time that somebody would actually close with our ass, okay? Now, I'm not demeaning anybody's fighting, but not all wars are created equally, right? They're equally as terrifying when you're the person being shot at. There's no doubt about that. But when you read about the battles of Cantien, and we talked about that, I'm going to staple this, so that's unprofessional too, but such is life, all right? Such is life. When you read about the Battle of Cantien, and it starts with the NVA attempt to overrun a Marine rifle company, right, to include mortars, artillery, right, engineers with Bangalore torpedoes breaching your wire, and North Vietnamese flamethrowers, right? That's a little bit different than an IED with small arms fire that covers it and then people running away. Right? I'm not saying, I'm just saying. So, with that in mind, I think it's interesting to hear what these guys have to say, right? Born of that experience, all right, come things like this, written by General Van Riper, okay, who you will hear on Monday. That's right. P.K. Van Riper, general type, United States Marine Corps. So, so I got these, and I'm going to share these with you. Actually, I'm going to post them. I'm going to post them with us this hour. But, well, maybe I shouldn't. And the reason I say I shouldn't is, oops. I don't want it to get lost in like another. I don't want it to get lost in another headline. Like for instance, the headline out of this hour probably should be something about General Dunford's comments on Afghanistan, which are nothing, which, you know, I spoke with him at the Marine Corps Marathon. I asked him if he could explain Afghanistan. He said, sure. So that probably should be the headline of this hour, because you're going to hear his audio here in a few minutes. But I need to talk, you know, all this stuff. Okay, so the first one. This one's dated July 11th, 1991, from the Command General, 2nd Marine Division. Subject, a philosophy of leadership. Okay, so, and then let me just tell you the one sentence that's underlined. This environment has and must remain one in which all have a strong sense that being a Marine is a special calling, not an occupation or a job. Yeah. When it starts like that, uh-oh. All right. The next one is dated July of 1991. So, same day. Let me see when the third one is. Does it come out in July? Yeah, all three. Boom, boom, boom. All right. This is entitled Words of Advice to Subordinates. One, take a longer, wider view of what is, quote, good for the Marine Corps. Right? Well, that's kind of an interesting little piece of advice that is applicable relative to this debate. Two, work in a positive mode. Don't advance on the troubles or the problems of others. Three, be inquisitive. Assume nothing. Keep your eyes and ears open and ask questions. I love this kind of stuff. Four, have a reading program. Even more importantly, your own clip and save service. Give professional advice. And then, this is what, the next thing is what he was famous for. And in this thing, he includes something from Secretary of the Navy, James H. Webb, Jr., former infantry officer, United States Marine Corps, with 1st Battalion, 5th Marines. All right. And then the last one is specific requirements or 21 rules. Okay, so, yeah, those are his 21 rules. Mattis had his flat-ass rules, all right? So, anyway, I have this to share with you. And so, I will post it. It might be in a separate post today. I'm like all a Twitter about that. Not a Twitter is in the platform, a Twitter is in, I love reading this stuff. And again, these guys fought against guys that would close with you, not guys that would shoot and scoot, right, and play the ROE game. They fought against guys that would, you know what their mission was? Locate, close with, and destroy the forces of the United States of America. Yep. And in that book written by Bao Lin, he talks about the fatal attitude that they had. They were going to die. They knew it. He left North Vietnam, his city, with a battalion of 500 soldiers. Five of them came back. Right? If you do that statistically, that's 100% die. Right? That's 99.9999 something. In fact, actually, what is it? And I can never do it on a calculator, because you know what? When I do it on a calculator, it gives me that, like, that kind of equation that I don't really understand. Okay, 5 divided by 500 equals, it says 0.01%. But that's because I haven't increased the number. So what is that? 1/100th of a percent? 1/100th of 1%? Or 1%? 99% chance you're dead. So anyway, so these rules come from that. Born of that. Born of that experience. So I think it's Interesting. All right. So then we have a whole series of news stories today. And there's some interesting stuff in the news. I would also recommend that you read that article. I should put the link up to this. And I will put this on the read board. And that is, it's called Not Just the Forward Deployed. Okay. And it's written by the Vice Admiral by the name of Joseph Acoin, who was relieved as the commanding officer of 7th Fleet. Now, unlike most stuff where the comments suck, okay, and really are depressing when you read the comments, these comments are, you can tell that it's not the normal idiot that that reads, right, Naval Institute proceedings. Right, and we all know that, right? If you're reading proceedings, normally you're not just your basic fool that fell off the shitter this morning. Anywho, I'll post that. The comments are very, very interesting, right? And for instance, here's one of them. I did a Chang tour on a DDG in Yokosuka back in the 1980s. Chang is chief engineer. That's the guy. The Chang, when the Chang speaks, everybody listens, okay? When the chief engineer who runs the engines on the ship, when that son of a bitch talks, everybody taking notes. All right. And this is about being gone too much. So he was in Yokosuka in the 1980s for 18 months. We were out of home port 12 months. Gone, gone, gone. But the Navy considered forward deployed ships to be just that, deployed. And we were manned at 105%. As department head of a 120-man engineering department, I had 16 khakis looking at me at morning quarters. MPA, boilers, officer, maintenance officer, electrical and auxiliaries, DCA, which is damage control, right? And all the things he had. Best darn chiefs I ever worked with. Used to joke to the captain I didn't have a job and he was a surface nuke guy. I swear we got numerical benefits for undesignated firemen. So he's talking about the way the Navy mans. So those are like, so I would tell you, read it. It's interesting, interesting insight, into the United States Navy. So with, that said, you know where, this program's going today. And I've got too much show, so I'm not going to screw around like I normally do in the morning and talk about something. The United States Marine Corps band makes this morning official. Good morning to you. Dedicated to Joe Dunford. I met him as the colonel. He's now the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He survived some tough years. And every time I've ever met him, he's always a pleasant guy. And even though he's a Red Sox fan, this is dedicated to him. You're going to hear a whole bunch of him here in the next few minutes. Let's go!
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
Come on. You got to love that. That makes you laugh every day. That makes me laugh.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose. So you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the core, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran, but you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, on that winning note, we'll check the weather around the land of the winning and the home of the brave. Cloudy and 69 in Quantico. In Camp Lejeune, the home of discipline in the Marine Corps. Yeah, it has been for a long time. It is sunny and 74. 29 Palms. What? I don't know if that's right. It says partly sunny in 86. And I know this thing updated because I watched it update. But I cannot believe that that's true. So, stand by as we recalibrate the computer device. Oh! Cloudy in 72 in Quantico. Mostly cloudy in 77 at Camp Lejeune. Clouds in 67 in 29 Palms. Cloudy in 58 Camp Pendleton. In Okinawa, cloudy in 73. In the Al-Anbar province of Iraq, it is cloudy in 80, so it's cooled off there. In the Helmand province of Afghanistan, it is not cooled off. Early in the evening, clear dark in 88. And in the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of lovely Southern California, it is cloudy and 61 degrees. Okay, now, you're going to hear a series of cuts. And the last one is one that got me looking for it, but it's not the way this is going to work. So, now I have to find down to the second. 30 minutes and 53 seconds. So 31, okay, 30, 27, 30, 50. That is 30, 27. Okay, at 30:53, General Dunford speaks here. So this is Secretary Shanahan speaking. I don't even know what he's talking about. Here he is.
General Dunford.
Chairman Shelby, Vice Chairman Durbin, distinguished members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to join Secretary Shanahan and Secretary Norquist.
This is the Senate Appropriations Committee, Subcommittee on Defense. Okay, so they're doing money. And so it's a general discussion about the DOD and where they're spending their money. At least that was supposed to be. Okay, so General Dunford's opening statement.
I remain honored to represent your soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines. Well, much of the discussion this morning is going to focus on the challenges we face. So I want to begin by assuring you that your armed forces can today deter a nuclear attack, defend the homeland, meet our alliance commitments, and effectively respond should deterrence fail. I believe we have a competitive advantage against any potential adversary defined as the ability to project power and win at the time and place of our choosing. But as members of this committee know, 17 years of continuous combat and fiscal instability have affected our readiness and eroded our competitive advantage. And Chairman, Secretary Shanahan went through the details of the budget, so I'll forego that and let the rest of my remarks be covered in the statement I've submitted for the record, and I look forward to your questions.
What a pro, huh? Like he's done that before. Okay, next segment at 35 minutes and 19 seconds. So you're going to hear Secretary Shanahan finish live.
And we've supplemented DHS with
his remarks. This is about the border.
How to more effectively control the southwest border. Chairman, maybe you could provide a little commentary.
Chairman, what we did was we have there's a position on the joint staff assistant to the chairman, and that individual typically supports the Secretary of State. We've offered him up to the Secretary of Homeland Security to put together an interagency planning team. As the Secretary said, although the commitment to the border hasn't impacted our preparedness for other missions at this point, what we wanted to do is get into a more predictable mode of the requirements that Department of Homeland Security has and do better at integrating across the government. So we provided a two-star plus a number of planners to the Department of Homeland Security so that we can lay out the next couple of years based on the assumptions of the numbers of migrants that we'll find at our border, based on the capacity of Homeland Security and their growth over time, and then obviously based on the support that they'll need from the rest of the government. So what we're hopeful to do is to have, in fairly short order for the Secretary of Homeland Security, a much more predictable, comprehensive plan for the next couple of years.
That sounds a lot different than what you hear in the news, doesn't it? Yeah, like, oh, well, shit, man. It sounds like a grown-up's in charge, right? Rather than the garbage I read in the news all the time. Yeah. Okay, this is Senator Leahy. I don't know. I didn't make a note next to this audio, but
mission value of Da Nang and Benoit Air Base, the remediation projects which I've discussed with you and I've discussed with Ms. Shannon.
I think he's talking about Vietnam. I've heard of those places.
And your predecessor. I realize we're an open hearing, but can you discuss the strategic value of increased security cooperation with the government of Vietnam? General?
Senator Lee, thanks. I'd start by telling you that in our national military strategy, when we looked at our source of strength, we said it was a network of allies and partners that we have since World War II. And so when we look at the Pacific and we talk about a free and open Indo-Pacific, our strategy there, you'd have to consider Vietnam as a critical partner in ensuring a free and open Indo-Pacific. And what we seek in the Pacific, of course, is a group of like-minded nations that will collectively act to ensure that we maintain international law, open access to the global commons, and in a legal way of addressing territorial disputes. And so I think Vietnam in those areas has indicated a shared interest in the free and open Indo-Pacific, and so I think Vietnam is very important in that regard.
Sending our aircraft carrier there must have sent quite a signal throughout that part of the world.
Senator, I think what it sent was a signal of the relationship between the United States and Vietnam, but more importantly, again, it was a physical manifestation of Vietnam's agreement with us on how we ought to address that free and open Indo-Pacific.
We went to Benoit, and of course, where the U.S. is helping clean that up, there was...
He goes on to talk about Vietnam.
Senator Reid, the reporting notwithstanding, I just want you to know our focus over the weekend.
Now, he's talking about Iran here and how they got, how we got to where we got, all right?
Was to deter, you know, we saw the intelligence, and so we sent some messages on Friday to make sure that it was clear to Iran that we recognized the threat and we were postured to respond to the threat. And then what I asked the secretary for on Sunday, eventually Lincoln would have made its way to the Gulf. What I asked really was to accelerate the movement of Lincoln and the Bomber Task Force so that there would be no ambiguity about our preparedness to respond to any threat against our people or our partners in the region. And that's why we worked pretty hard to do that, because what we didn't want to do is be in a position to respond. We wanted to make sure that we took as much action as we could over the weekend to actually deter that. But I understand your point on the reporting piece.
So there you have it. We saw shit, them moving ballistic missiles. We picked up the phone and called them and said, hey, you ought not to do that. And then the aircraft carrier, the Lincoln, was told to kick it into high gear. And as a nuclear vessel, yeah, I'm not saying that those things can go, fast, but those things can go fast. So, interesting. You know, that's why I love doing this, right? You read the news. The news sucks, man. You know, 350 words or whatever. So here he is talking about mental health, of all things.
More broadly than just simply mental health, Chairman?
Senator, when I first really worked on this issue institutionally, I was assistant commandant in the Marine Corps back in 2010. And at the time, we had a very stovepiped approach to delivering health, mental health care. And so I think there's probably two things that I think are promising developments. The first is the multidisciplinary approach to healthcare. And now when an individual seeks help, it's not a point-to-point. They see the psychiatrist, that doesn't work. They see the psychologist, that doesn't work. They see a social worker, that doesn't work. There's a multidisciplinary approach where an individual is managed by a team that has the appropriate skills to deal with that individual's problem. The other challenge that we had was, I think, a misinterpretation in some cases of privacy associated with medical care, in the sense that we didn't have the kind of sharing of information across command teams, chaplains, medical professionals, so that when we had an individual who needed help, we could identify that individual and take proactive action. And I think those two things are among the promising initiatives, but I don't think any of us would say we're complacent with where we are, either with mental health as a whole or specifically with the scourge of suicide.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Schatz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll start with General Dunford, and I want to talk about on that.
Sure, I would. In fact,
talking about the relocation of the base in Guam right here.
Probably just by coincidence, the Secretary and I are meeting today at 1600 on this issue, and I think there's really three main areas, and I think General Neller's probably talked about it. We have the aviation laydown, we have the infantry laydown, we have the artillery laydown, and there are challenges with the training in all three of those areas, and so we do have some things to discuss with the Secretary today. So as we move forward, as you say, the posture that we have, I make one key assumption that it will be decades as we implement the DPRI, and we want to make sure we're going to do it right. So we'll talk to the Secretary about those two issues today. But I think your characterization for the members is fair. Two key assumptions, these go back to 2008, 2009. One was that we would have, when we moved significant forces down to Guam, that we would have training areas down there for the infantry forces that would be there. We haven't developed the access to those training areas as fast as we want. And, of course, given the challenges we have in the Pacific, mobility remains a challenge, and we've got to look at increasing the capacity of mobility in the area. But I can assure you it has the attention of the Secretary and I, and Secretary Spencer, Secretary of Navy, has had, I know, a number of conversations with the Secretary as well.
Can I just make one comment?
Sure, go
ahead. This has really evolved out of the National Defense Strategy with focus on China. And we're very cognizant of the decisions we're making in terms of construction because they'll last 30 to 50 years. And so the
short-range missile test.
So this is North Korea nuke question.
This past weekend.
Senator, I'll start by saying that I am absolutely confident that the training program we have in place right now will allow us to do what...
Brushing only reaches 25% of your mouth. Listerine cleans virtually 100%, helping to prevent gum disease and bad breath. Never settle for 25%. Always go for 100%. Bring out the bowl.
Can you believe that? Yeah, so I have a story open. And it decides that, you know, as websites do, that they'll bomb something onto your computer. Nice. Anyway, North Korean nukes.
And I speak for General Abrams on the peninsula and Admiral Davison. We did revise the training program on the peninsula, and we used to conduct large-scale exercises for two reasons. One, very high profile to deter North Korea, and the others to maintain proficiency and conduct training. We have found other ways to do the training, and we've gone through each and every mission essential task of U.S. Forces Korea and Combined Forces Korea and put together a new program that's focused on the mission essential tasks and with admittedly a smaller profile in terms of deterrence to support the diplomatic track. But I would tell you I am completely confident right now that the program that we have in place between exercises and training will allow us to maintain proficiency at the right levels.
Let me turn to a different issue.
All right, now we're going to talk about more about nuclear weapons with Senator John Hoeven, who's a friend of mine.
Our initiatives are completely informed by the Nuclear Posture Review that told us what it would take to deter the use of nuclear weapons by an adversary. And obviously Russia and China, as you highlighted, are the two most significant nuclear adversaries we face, but not the only.
Mr. Secretary?
No, fully agree with that.
Make sure we're covering the Arctic.
So this is a question about the Arctic. Again, Senator Hoeven.
Senator, first, we're making the right kind of investment. But in candor, I have to tell you that I don't think any combatant commander would tell you today that they have sufficient intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. We're probably meeting on a day-to-day basis the recommendations I make to the Secretary, probably meet somewhere between 30% and 40% of what the combatant commanders need. So there's a strong demand signal for additional ISR, and what we do for the Secretary is make recommendations of how to best allocate the ISR that we have today, and then as you'll see, we make continued investments in the future. And one of the reasons why we've invested more in space is that will be a significant enhancement to our overall intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance capability.
Mr. Secretary, anything to add on that?
Two things. We'll never have enough ISR. I mean, I think just
200 service members in Iraq is to train and work with Iraqi forces.
Okay, so I don't know the senator's name. She's asking about the mission in Iraq.
Forces in the counter ISIS mission.
That's partially accurate, Senator. The most important thing that we're doing in the region is conducting counterterrorism to protect the homeland and protect the American people. But part of our mission in doing that is to enhance the capability of the Iraqis to consolidate the gains that were made as we cleared ISIS over the past 2.5 years.
Yeah.
You know, you don't hear that written much about. It's kind of the strategic piece in all this, is that why are we there? Why are we still fighting there? Are we there so that we can have a victory parade, or are we there to make sure on an quote-unquote interdiction mission we're denying them the use of these areas of the world, right, to develop what they do? And I think that's something that most people, I think, and when it comes to Afghanistan, you'll hear that again, right? Yeah, we're there to help the Afghans, but what is our role there? Why are we there as Americans? Is that the primary mission, right, to help them take control of their country? Well, it's one of the things we're doing there, but the primary mission is to deny Afghanistan as a safe haven to forces like Al-Qaeda and ISIL. So, anyway, you'll hear that. That's a common theme.
So not Iran, in other words. Are you aware of any evidence that would make Iran or the IRGC an associated force of Al-Qaeda?
Senator, we probably couldn't talk about that in this venue.
Okay. I'll try another question. Secretary Pompeo went to Iraq to discuss a new threat stream from Iran. It seemed to me, at least at first glance, to be
I don't view that threat stream as being the same as ISIS, but our posture in the region has been to deter Iran really going back to 1979. And so when Secretary Pompeo raised the visibility of the threat streams that we had seen really intensify late last week, what we were attempting to do, both with the movement of force elements that the Secretary approved and the public messaging, was to deter any potential action by the IRGC or Iran as a whole.
While on...
Interesting, right? I think it's... This might be Lindsey Graham.
Like the world's still a pretty dangerous place, right?
It's certainly my judgment that it is, Senator.
Okay, let's talk about Syria. The Syrian Stabilization Force, how's that coming, General Dunford?
Senator, it's coming along well in terms of the tasks we're trying to provide, as you know well, and we appreciate your help in this regard. We're training the Syrian Democratic Forces. We have sufficient U.S. and coalition forces right now to perform that mission, and the State Department has taken the lead on developing governance in those areas that have been cleared of ISIS as well.
Well, I think you agree that should still be our policy.
It is still our policy, Senator, and I think you probably know Secretary Pompeo is meeting with Foreign Minister Lavrov twice in a period of 7 days, and I know that will be part of his message. Yeah.
So are you concerned about increased military activity by Assad against the people of Idlib?
We have in recent weeks seen increased activity.
Now, Idlib, it's the city in Syria. And there's been increased activity, Russian air activity, Syrian ground activity. And so people that pay attention, this is a precursor for something bad to happen there. That's what Senator Graham's asking the chairman about.
Around Idlib.
Okay. Well, I hope the president will actually retreat, and I appreciate what Secretary Pompeo is doing in Afghanistan. Secretary Shanahan, do you agree that the reason we have troops in Iraq is to protect the American homeland from a rise of radical Islam?
I agree with that.
Okay. Do you agree that ISIS-K is getting larger, not smaller, in Afghanistan?
I do.
Do you agree that a counterterrorism platform is needed for a while to come in Afghanistan?
until the reduction of violence in Afghanistan is no longer a sanctuary.
Right.
Yeah.
It's in our national security interest to have a counterterrorism platform. Do you agree that we'll never get a peaceful resolution until Pakistan denies the Taliban safe haven?
I believe Pakistan plays an important role.
Do you agree with that, General Dunford?
I do, sir.
Okay.
Awkward. Oh, do you agree, Secretary Shanahan, that, and then Shanahan's parsing his words, General Dunford, I agree. Whoop. Sorry.
Libya. Is it the policy of the United States in Libya to support a peaceful resolution of the dispute, not a military solution?
Correct. That's the policy.
Is that true, General Dunford?
It is, Senator.
Are we picking one side over the other?
No.
Do we still support the UN-recognized government?
We support a diplomatic solution to Libya.
I would recommend that you have the president or someone call the prime minister of Libya to let him know that the Haftar phone call was not picking sides. Do you agree that would be smart? There's been confusion?
Yeah, communication is vital.
Okay, good. You agree with that, General Dunford?
Yes, Senator.
Okay, we're almost done. Iran. If they restart their nuclear program, reprocessing, would you consider that a threat to the United States? Of nuclear fuel?
Senator, when we look at Iran, we see four threats that exist and one potential threat. So certainly a nuclear-armed Iran would be a threat to the United States, along with the use of proxies, the maritime threat, the cyber threat, maritime threat.
Do you agree with that, Secretary Shanahan? So I think if Iran restarts their nuclear program, we should consider that a hostile act and put all options on the table. Finally, about Iran. When we send American troops to Iraq and Afghanistan to protect our country and our allies from the rise of ISIS, do we owe it to them to protect them from all threats?
We do.
Under the law of war, is it appropriate for a lawful force to defend itself against all threats, General Dunford?
That is consistent with LOAC.
So if the Iranians have designs on attacking our troops in Syria and Iraq, they're there to protect American homeland against the rise of radical Islam like ISIS, we would have the ability to defend ourselves if necessary. Is that correct?
Our forces deployed, make no mistake about it, Senator, they have the ability to defend themselves. And everyone else.
In case the Iranians are listening, they attack American forces in Iraq and Syria or any other place at their own peril?
Our forces have the ability to respond immediately, and they don't need to come back to Washington to ask permission.
And you will make sure they're defended?
We will make sure to defend it, Senator.
Yes, thank you. Thank you both.
Areas where we have presence.
Senator Graham, making it real. Unless there's any confusion in the Iranian minds. That's serious stuff, though. When you start moving those kind of missiles around, and does the United States just sit there and allow that to happen? And allow, essentially, the Iranians to broaden and to raise the threat to not only Americans, but to all of our allies in the region. So, interesting. All right, this is about now Afghanistan. And this is really General Dunford's comments. And if you've been listening to the last, 20 minutes of his comments, and these comments are over the course of a 2-hour hearing, by the way. But if you're listening, what you'll hear is his longest answer of the hearing, by the way. But it's something that what he echoed, what he told me, and he's consistently said, for probably years, and that is this, that our presence in Afghanistan is twofold. Make no mistake about it. Number one is denying Afghanistan as a base of operations for organizations like Al-Qaeda and ISIS, ISIL. Okay. Two is the support of the government of Afghanistan. And so you'll hear that in this, but it's interesting. H.R. McMaster is in the news again for the first time in a long time. And I'll talk about kind of, we'll take a break and then I'll quickly talk about him, and then Jeff Kenney's going to join us at the top of the hour. So, here's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff talking about Afghanistan and the future.
Is of great.
This is Secretary Shanahan tying his remarks up.
Greater value and importance to the Afghan people?
No. Senator, if I could address this, I don't think anybody would want to withdraw our forces from Afghanistan or the broader Middle East more than me. But I will share with you the advice that I've provided now to two presidents. We have significantly reduced our commitments in Afghanistan. When I commanded in Afghanistan, we had over 100,000 Americans. We had another 30,000 NATO forces. We're down to about 15,000 Americans and 7,000 NATO forces. It's my judgment today, based on the threat from South Asia, that we need to continue to put pressure on those terrorist groups or they'll pose a threat to the United States. I know it's frustrating to you and the American people for us to be there for such a long period of time. It's just my judgment right now that the conditions for a complete withdrawal aren't there. The conditions for continuing to decrease our presence in the region, as we have, and increase the responsibility of, in this case, the Afghan forces to provide security for themselves, I think we can expect that to happen. And I would echo the Secretary, while I'm not anything other than realistic about the current negotiations we have in a peace process, it is the first time in many, many years where we've had some opportunity now to pursue a peaceful resolution to the war in Afghanistan. And at the end of the day, I don't believe there is a military solution, and I think we'll need to maintain a counterterrorism presence as long as an insurgency continues in Afghanistan.
Yeah. Mr.
He's been pretty consistent about that. Right, he's been pretty consistent about that, and I just want to dovetail that with a story about H.R. McMaster. Headline: this is in Military Times. H.R. McMaster says the public is fed a war weariness narrative that hurts the U.S. strategy. So, if you listen to what General Dunford just said, this whole "we're tired of it, get us out of there." War in Afghanistan can be sustained, but the narrative of a war-weary American public is hurting the effort, former National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster said on Wednesday. Long wars are manageable when waged alongside allies utilizing burden-sharing, said McMaster, who now serves as the chairman of the Center on Military and Political Power at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Quote, there's this defeatist narrative that's inaccurate and doesn't reflect what's at stake and doesn't reflect the actual situation, McMaster said at a think tank forum in Washington, D.C. Quote, a young student stood up and said, all I've known in my whole life is war, McMaster said. Now, he's never been to war, but he's been subjected, I think, to this narrative of war weariness. The United States today has a smaller percent of its military deployed overseas than it has since 1950. Americans should view, this echoes what the chairman just said, Americans should view the war in Afghanistan as essential, as essentially an insurance policy, Dunford's words, against what could happen in the country. Adding that the collapse of the U.S.-backed Afghan government would forfeit a region known as Khorasan to jihadi groups. Quote, they're trying to establish these emirates, he said, and then stitch these emirates together into a caliphate in which they force people to live under their brutal regime and then export terror to attack their near enemies, Arab states, Israel, and their far enemies, Europe and the United States. So, interesting comments from H.R. McMaster. And here's the last part of his remarks that I'll read. Quote, if you think about the importance of the mission in Afghanistan to protect what is fundamentally a transformed society from the enemies that we're facing, the Taliban and their Al-Qaeda allies, it is a cost that is sustainable. I think what's happening now is almost an exclusive focus in some places on the return of great power competition. It has become almost an emotional cathartic. It has become almost an emotional cathartic to get beyond the wars of unanticipated length and difficulty in Afghanistan and Iraq. Interesting. Afghanistan is not going to become Switzerland. It's just not. It can be Afghanistan, and it can be an Afghanistan like it was in the 70s, or like it was during this really short but brutal period of rule under the Taliban from 96 to 2001. So H.R. McMaster echoing General Joe Dunford. So as I said, I've got too much show today. I'm not going to be able to get to the rest of the news. But again, I always think that it's significant and important to hear, the principles, and especially as smart as General Dunford is. When you hear him talk, right, whether it's, the cryptic way we've heard of, this aircraft carrier thing movement, like, what? Anybody with a little time around the Pentagon or the DOD knows that those carrier battle groups, it takes a lot to move them. And so it doesn't happen overnight. Anyway, and then when you hear him talk about it, right, that we confirmed intelligence, we picked up the phone, we called the Iranians and said, hey, you don't want to do this. And then over the course of the weekend, the chairman gives instructions to the Lincoln battle group, right, flip it into high, which means, right, the carrier, and can go. And it's interesting because while the carrier speeds are classified, a lot of the smaller escorts can't keep up with them. So when they go, they go. All right. But anyway, that's an issue. So there would be no mistake, right, in not only the hastening of the movement of the Lincoln, but also the movement of the B-52 squadron that headed that way as well. So it makes much more sense than kind of the 300-word blurbs that you hear anyway that the ink-stained wretches give us. All right. So with that said, Joe Dunford, in his own words, always awesome to play that stuff. So we'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.